Hello and welcome everyone back to another episode of The Publisher Lab. I'm Tyler Bishop, and joined alongside me today is a special guest. We talk about a lot of things on the show, but no more and none that are as predictably going to be fundamentally part of the show for the foreseeable future is SEO. And for that reason, we have Zach Ashman joining us today. Zach, welcome to the show.
Thank you very much, Tyler. It's a pleasure to be here.
So we are tapping into the vast resources that we have inside of our building once again. So Zach, tell everyone a little bit more about what you do here at Ezoic, and then also sort of like, the process that you go through with publishers and just sort of like, yeah, why you're here, why you talk to publishers, and why SEO.
Yeah. As you said, my name's Zach. I'm one of the SEO specialists at Ezoic, which I say I'm one of, but I'm one of one other than our SEO director. So it's me and him against the world.
or against Google, which is like, it's kind of against the world, I guess.
Both and for sure. It's very hand in hand. But yeah, so what I do primarily at the company is I pick up the slack wherever I can. So Robert, being the genius that he is, he takes care of all of our higher end publishers, VIP status. They've got all the big status and big names that he takes care of. And essentially, anyone under that umbrella that doesn't fall into that, I take care of them. So what I do is primarily provide full in-depth audits on the technical and the content side for our publishers. And so that usually takes me about 2 days to do, from looking at just their basic on-page strategy all the way to, okay, what type of plugins are they using? Where is that impacting their indexing? Where's their visibility at? Yeah. And everything in between. So I do 2 audits a week, but even though I only do 2, I'm meeting with publishers almost every day, whether it be email, short 30-minute calls. And so I've built a pretty sweet relationship with a few of them where I'm almost having monthly calls with them. And I even just had one the other day where he's like, yeah, I kind of forgot about this meeting, but how are you? So we just ended up talking about his life. And yeah, so it's a great time.
Yeah. And in my experience, the SEO folks, especially people like yourself, when publishers get on those calls, you're usually one of the favorite people that publishers get to talk to, because most of the time, if a publisher is, in need of SEO expertise, it's usually because something negative is happening, or they have a concern, or on the other end of that, which is they're trying to grow and they're having, trouble trying to grow. And so I'm kind of curious, like in those conversations, what would you say is like probably the number one, challenge or concern that publishers have had over the last like maybe 3 or 4 months? Or does it change more rapidly than that?
Yeah. As a publisher yourself, I'm sure that you know that definitely the trend of requests tends to tick up when there's an update, when Google comes out with something. And it could be even as something as minor as like when John Mueller tweeted out the thing about FAQ schema, yeah. The world blew up. I got so many messages like, hey, you told me to do this. What's up? So it does follow a trend depending on what Google's talking about. But for the most part, something that's probably been the most important to people over just the last, I would probably say the last couple of months and throughout the summer, has been how to probably combat AI with a continuing evolving SEO world. People are either on the really hesitant side, they don't really know what to do. They're either on the really positive side where they're half their site's AI, and we talk about that, or it's usually somewhere in the middle of like, well, I've used it here. How do I optimize that the best to enhance my SEO, and how do I make sure I don't hurt myself? So that's been a really interesting conversation to have with people and see everyone's different perspectives. And it's been really cool to see how I can become better as an SEO using AI and just helping people in that way. So that's probably the number one thing that comes up.
Yeah. And I imagine, like you mentioned, that's a good experience as an SEO, because, realistically, there's probably a balance there, right? When it comes to using AI, but what that balance is optimally, like Google doesn't even really know what that is yet, because the users haven't had a chance to experience this world. And so being able to sort of like see lots of those instances, I would imagine like the level of expertise that you are able to kind of glean from that is, yeah, you'll probably be one of few people that will have some experience kind of finding that balance here over the next probably year or so, as everybody seeks to figure out how do we evolve in this AI world with AI content. So I guess of all the things that Google has done as it relates to AI and sort of what they've said, what they've sort of not necessarily backtracked on, but sort of conflicted and then come back to in terms of what they said about it, what sticks out to you in terms of, you know, what do you think that Google's trying to achieve? Or I guess maybe from the perspective of a publisher, like where is that balance, and like where are you most likely to both be safe and then also take advantage of some of the things that are available now?
Yeah, Google has always been such a firm believer in unique content, and that should always, I mean, the main thing that I always try to push to publishers is transparency and being creative. Everyone has their unique personality behind content, whether they are writing themselves or they have writers doing it. They're trying to communicate that creativity somehow. And that's the thing that I've seen that Google's rewarded time and time again, is people being creative, people being unique with their content. And so the question has become, well, how do you pair that creativity with using a tool like AI?
Yeah.
Because AI is notoriously kind of logical thinking. Yeah. It'll produce the result for you without a lot of thought unless you give it certain parameters. So those parameters would be the answer to your question of, when you're asking ChatGPT for these things, are you just simply saying, write me an article on this topic and then letting it alone?
Yeah.
The better recommendation would be, write it in this style. Write it using personal pronouns. Write it using language such as we, my family, and I have experienced, and starting creating this transparent feeling that when the user comes to your site, not only do they feel trusted that, oh, okay, this person has a unique perspective on this, but also search engine crawlers. Search engine crawlers are going to pick up on those words. They're going to be parsing your content and going through everything. And if they're picking up on those unique signals, and you're also tweaking, of course, that content with your own flair, usually it works out. The joke that I always kind of make with publishers is like Google is always going to rely on the human spirit.
Yeah.
They have to have that. And even AI needs it to generate content. And the more that you lean into that, the more transparent you are, the more authentic you are while continuing to use AI, the better you'll be. So,
yeah. And I think that's great advice. I think the writing styles thing is really something that people listening to the show can take home and probably implement immediately. And I think one of the things that we've talked about a lot as it relates to sort of like the advance of AI, especially just the kind of like the rapid progression that we've seen this year, is that, you know, it's something that's incredibly efficient. But realistically, you know, they always say content is king. And it's been true for such a long time. And it's a trope because it is true to make great quality content. You know, your sort of humanness is the thing that makes it good or bad, your expertise, like what do you know that the rest of the world doesn't that they want to know about? And I think if you start thinking about how do I give that information to an AI to speed up the processes? So like if I have 10 great content ideas, I might not be able to do them all, but if I can give those ideas fully to someone else to produce, you just have to kind of think of the AI as almost as if you had like this, you know, army fleet of basically unskilled workers that could, you know, do nothing but write, but they can only write what you give them to produce. And thinking of things sort of in this realm, you know, where do you see sort of like the future of, or I guess based on the decisions that they've made so far, where do you see Google kind of taking things as it stands right now? I know that they've got sort of their roadmap, but a lot of times I find that it's a lot easier to kind of figure out what you can expect from Google by looking at what they're doing versus kind of what they're saying, which is they sort of speak in riddles sometimes and or I guess more so puzzles, where it's more about what they don't say sometimes than what it is that mm-hmm. they, you know, will confirm or deny. But yeah, I'm kind of curious on what you've seen from them recently, and then just changes to the SERP or just sort of changes that you've seen and, you know, what you might extrapolate from that.
Yeah. Of course, as I'm here on the podcast and you've asked a really intelligent question, I'm not remembering the exact source of what I'm about to say. So I apologize. Someone fact check me on this. The first indicator that kind of leads to my answer to your question is Google's leniency on AI language. Beforehand, in their documentation and in their recommendations on how to write reliable content, the wording that they would use to surround AI was a bit more strict of trying not, of almost kind of the nuance behind it was don't really use it. If you are using it, make sure you make it really known to us that you're using it.
Yeah.
And so it was people, I think that kind of created some hesitancy there. And this is the part, of course, as I'm here, I'm forgetting exactly where this comes from, but I read an article about how the leniency behind that language has lessened. It's less strict.
Yeah.
And so they're starting to realize, okay, the AI is getting smarter. And I think they're actually, what they're actually saying is the AI is actually creating helpful content. As the AI kind of movement continues to get better, because I don't think it's going away. I think it's only just going to continue, is they're most likely just, in my opinion, I think they're going to continue to be more and more lenient with it as time goes on, because it's going to get better. Google's goal is to provide people with content that is helpful, reliable, people first, that's going to really impact users, whether it be how to bake a cake or how to fix my car or best lawnmower to buy. They're trying to give that most useful information to people. And if AI becomes the most helpful result, then that's going to be the one that they're going to promote. Now, they're going to have to find the balance between, well, how do we make money on this and ensure that we're providing helpful content to people? So I think the guidelines that Google's going to continue to promote are just going to provide a more lenient aspect to AI. That overall, as it continues to become smarter and wiser and people find it more accessible than even Google itself, I think they're going to have to ask themselves the question of where do we find that balance and how do we provide that to users in the most helpful way? How that impacts publishers, I'm not 100% sure. I think it's going to be, because, I mean, if that truly does happen, then they could just promote Bard and they can advertise that. But like I said earlier, and as everyone kind of knows, they need publishers in order to sustain their own economy. So where it goes from here, I'm really not 100% sure. We'll kind of have to see. Like you said, they speak in puzzles, they speak in riddles. We're not really sure what they say behind closed doors, but they have to recognize the usefulness of AI. They can't turn it off. They can't turn it away.
Yeah.
So we'll see.
I think it's just as much of a risk as it is for them is something that could potentially be an advantage. And I think they got caught off guard in a big way. Internally there, I know that, you know, they thought of themselves as completely leading the way with this huge head start on everyone. And then OpenAI's ChatGPT 3 really sort of had them realize that what has everybody been doing the last decade?
Yeah.
And I think the other thing that, you know, sticks out to me with this is, and I think this should be reassuring to our publishers listening to the show, it's that two things that I know for a fact from sitting in Google's building and talking to one conversation with members of the webmaster team there, where they thought that I was a Google employee for the majority of the time because I was hosting events there.
Oh, with nice.
And one of the things that stuck out to me from that conversation that I will share, and I've shared this, I think, maybe once before on the show, it's that the cornerstone metric or cornerstone metrics that they use internally, and this is both for both legal protections and also to ensure that the product stays good, are all, you can kind of think of it as the analytics that you see on your website through something like a Google Analytics. They have the same, they have a similar sort of system inside of the search engine that looks at the SERP itself. So what do those interactions look like? They, in the past, they've said they really want to minimize the amount of time that somebody actually does spend on the SERP, but then they want to gauge sort of like what those interactions look like when they come back. So are they, you know, bouncing between different results? Are they progressively, you know, searching for terms that show that they've actually maybe learned something? So you search, how do I bake a cake? Then you search, where do I buy flour? It means you got some, you got what you needed because you actually searched like something that is progressive. So that result isn't bad because you searched something else. It's helping you get the information that you need. And I think that because of that, one of the things that sticks out to me as well is that, like you said, Google needs publishers. Google needs as many publishers as that can exist. It's in their best interest to give everyone that essentially is making great content, you know, some traffic or some audience, because Google's biggest threat is not another search engine. As hype as everybody got on Bing earlier this year, I still don't see the Google search engine market share going anywhere. The biggest threats are from, you know, both AI in one realm, and then the other is still from Apple and the, you know, sort of like app ecosystem experience as mobile continues to rise, that people will no longer use the open web, that they'll use, you know, different apps and other resources to find information. And I find that that's, you know, that kind of leads us into the news, which are one of the things that we normally go through on the show. So we've got a curated list of SEO in particular this week. And so in the SEO news of the day, so links are not a top three Google search ranking factor, says Gary, I think it's Illis. I met the gentleman once and I still don't know how to pronounce his last name. But, you know, speaking of the things that Google is looking at and measuring, you know, their links have always been something that gets a lot of attention because of, you know, Google's early patents and things along those lines, and the fact that they clearly are something that is factored in and utilized in probably multiple different ways and weighted in different ways. But I'm curious your thoughts on this sort of, how do you take in information when someone like this that's allowed to speak on it from Google is providing information? And then what do you think in particular of this comment and sort of what might it mean? What can we read from this?
Yeah. No, I thought this was an interesting story because as a lot of our publishers probably know, and as you probably know, probably the number one request I get on LinkedIn is, hello, my name is so-and-so. I would love to build you 3 backlinks to your website. How can I help you? And so the first thing I thought of when I read this news article was, oh no, like half my LinkedIn connections are like, I don't know what they're going to do now that this has happened. So with this, I think, can you please restate the first question? You said 2 questions. I remember the second. Can you restate your first one for
me? Yeah, the first one was really just, you know, when somebody like Gary, you know, John Mueller being, you know, pretty much the other one, along with maybe Danny Sullivan, who he pretty much just goes by Search Console Liaison now. He was once one of us. He was a member of the media, but he, you know, those three are kind of like greenlit to talk about SEO. So how do you take, you know, information like this when it comes from someone like that, what do you do with it? Because obviously it's an official source, but you know,
yeah,
they pick their words pretty carefully.
Yeah, I think that it's interesting that Google kind of uses, well, it's not even, I feel like John Mueller, Gary, like they're essentially the mouthpieces for Google, but they almost are, I don't know. I wonder if it does go through some sort of process where they're like, hey, I'm going to tweet this out. What do you guys think? And they're like, yeah, go for it. Or they're just in bed and like they just woke up and they're like, I'm going to talk about this. Who knows?
I do know that they've gone through sort of like these ebb and flows of like extreme legal review of like everything that they communicate to, no, we need to be more approachable. And I think it really depends on sort of like what sort of like basically judicial process they're in, yeah, at the time, because if the, you know, sort of if the heat that's coming on them is about transparency, then it's like, well, then we need to interact with people more. But then if it's around sort of like, you know, you're communicating these things to people and then they're trying to play gotcha maybe in court, then they're like, okay, well, we need to, you know, roll that back and be more opaque maybe with some of the things we communicate. So yeah, I don't know. I don't know what phase of the moon we're in now, but
yeah,
I think that there's an element of that to it as well.
Yeah, who knows? But I think it's like how approachable it is, because like, I mean, take John Mueller's, you know, his, I'm forgetting the name of it, his talks every week.
Yeah, I know what you mean.
I'm forgetting the name, of course, as I'm here. I should know this. But his hangouts, like that's so approachable. Anyone, you know, most people are able to go and find answers to most questions. He's super approachable at that. And I think that aspects of that are really positive. What I think is negative about it is some of these changes do harshly affect people's progress within their sites. Yeah. And a lot of people decide to pursue a career with their sites. And when things like this come out, it's very terrifying if it's in an approachable way where I need to pay rent next month and so-and-so is saying that this is going to change and that's a cornerstone of my site. So I think it has pros and cons. I think for the everyday person that is not relying on Google as their primary ecosystem, I think it's great. I think for people who do take this as a large part of their income and a large part of their life and career, I think they could maybe make a better system for these types of updates, yeah. But it's Google. So it's kind of the nature of the beast when someone gets into it. In terms of the actual news here, I'm not super surprised, mainly because shout out again to our director of SEO. He kind of taught me this and showed me kind of his perspective on this when it comes to backlinks. Of the majority of backlinks, most of the time are not built. They're just generated because of great content.
Yeah.
And his perspective on it was, well, why not just create incredible content that people want to share instead of spending your time trying to get a backlink from someone? And I thought that was fantastic advice. And so that's the same advice that I give to people now. So I think that this is a really positive recommendation, a positive change that they're wanting to create because of that. That more often than not, a lot of your backlinks that are being generated to this site, you don't have any control of. Sometimes it'll come from a really great place, sometimes it won't. And so chasing the best form of your content is always the best method. So I think this is a step in the right direction.
And you know, one of the things that I'll often tell people, because long before we ever had Robert back in the day, it would be me that would jump on crisis calls with publishers a lot of times on SEO. And the majority of the time I would see people specifically, even links definitely falls into this bucket, is a lot of the wounds or a lot of the challenges that they would face were often self-inflicted. Hmm. And, you know, the thing with the link building, I would always ask, so we're going to build links. How are we going to do that? And they said, well, X, Y, Z way. And you say, okay, well, like, how does that work then? Like, how will you know when that's providing ROI and like what, by what mechanism? And of course, you could ask the same question about many things in SEO, and because Google doesn't have, you know, it written down somewhere, it makes it really hard to give a, you know, a rock solid answer. But the thing that I think about with this in particular is that Google has said before, and I believe this is 100% true, that the gross majority of links are just ignored. Because what do you do with, like you said, there's all kinds of links that come to your site that you have that are maybe non-obvious, that make sense, that come to the site. And they don't mean anything. I know that they have a patent. It's called like the Silver Surfer patent or something like that, that says that they pay the most attention to the links that they know that real users click on, but that's valuable as well. And so there's obviously going to have to be some controls with something like that as well. But the advice of sort of like make content that people want to link to, that is actually how you can build links. You can think about, what types of things can I add to my content that then people will want to share and link to? You know, like the classic example is like graphs and infographics and things like that, that, you know, aid an article that play really well on social media, but then you can build those things or get somebody to build them for you. But
yeah,
you know, sending somebody off sight unseen is kind of like hiring a mercenary army. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
It's like, it sounds good when the mission, they're carrying out the right mission, but like what happens when they're out of control and marching on your capital, you know?
Yeah, exactly. And I think it's also, I'm glad that you brought up infographics, because that's a primary, if you've had an audit with me and you're listening to this podcast, I guarantee I brought up infographics, because I love that recommendation, because I noticed the same exact trend as I was looking in people's backlink profiles, as I would filter by .jpg and 80% of their backlinks were coming from their images.
Yeah.
And now I'll admit 79% of those were probably spam. But the idea that, wow, bots are usually pulling, bots or crawlers or whoever you want to call are going towards your images, it's a fantastic signal to ensure that you're promoting positive images whenever possible. And it's so easy to do nowadays with AI.
Yeah.
another recommendation that came from Robert is have there's other AIs that will generate images for you that are completely custom, and you can again give nuance to it. I want this image in this style with this graph with this data, and give it so many parameters and have it run it through a few times, and all of a sudden you've got a great thing you can go and edit in Canva. 15 minutes later, you've got a fantastic header image that you can have. And that's such a positive thing for backlinks. And because there is a balance of, especially when you're starting a site, yes, you want to have that backbone of fantastic keyword research, fantastic content that's valuable to users. But of course, there's also some part of a backlink strategy that I do think is positive, especially depending on the type of content you're writing. So like, for example, if you're trying to provide information on, like, let's just say history, a great place to try and get your content is Wikipedia. Everyone goes for history content. They go to Wikipedia. Yeah. And if you're one of those references at the bottom, that's a great signal.
Yeah.
So, and those are easy. Those aren't that hard to get because Wikipedia is open source and anyone can really edit it.
Yeah.
So it's easy to kind of go and add those changes. And if you've got great content, they have no reason not to use you.
Yeah.
So there are some things that make sense, but a lot of times it just makes sense to make great content. So yeah.
Yeah. And I think that that's one of the things that publishers should probably ask themselves quite a bit, which is, you know, who are the people that need references for this sort of thing? So you mentioned the Wikipedia thing. And I think one of the things that I've had a lot of luck with, and this is even just, you know, I think of all marketing as sort of content marketing. You're marketing a message to people. And throughout my career, one of the things that I've always found to be true, which is if I'm an authority or I do have expertise or data or just anything that's proprietary to sort of me, or I guess unique to me. So with Ezoic, it's like I have access to all of our internal data, which includes all these sites and information and a lot of information about the advertising industry. So there are both reporters and all kinds of different publications and influencers and figures that, you know, that speak on this stuff or write about this stuff or are very interested in it, maybe have a blog on it. And by providing something that like is very specific to their interests, a lot of times I can kind of target them specifically sometimes with my content and they'll pick it up. And then their audience is maybe much larger than mine. And that becomes something that's really, really helpful. And that thinking of it in sort of that lens of like, what type of content can I make that the figures in this space that are, you know, authorities or maybe have large audiences, what would they be like? Ah, I want to share that, or this is great. And maybe even want to work with me on some of the information that I've got so that I can reach somebody that's, you know, maybe otherwise not going to see or hear about my content.
Yeah. And that's really applicable, I've found, in the news space, of one, wanting to target specific people with larger mouthpieces than you, but two, targeting specific types of content to help Google better understand what you're authoritative in. So if you know that there's a specific reporter at Fox Sports who just absolutely hates the Rams and they tweet about it.
I hate the Rams. I'm a former St. Louis resident and they moved out of our town and they're dead to me.
I completely agree. I feel that I grew up here in San Diego. The Chargers left to LA into Dodger territory. Oh, it's just horrible.
I have bad news. I was so mad whenever the Rams moved. When I moved to San Diego, I was like, I heard that they're going to move, so I can't become a fan yet. And then when they did move, I started to ask the question of like, maybe it's me. I've had two teams leave my city like almost immediately. So yeah, God forbid I become a fan of your football team.
Yeah, please don't. I'm not going to tell you it before.
Good call.
Yeah. So, but yeah, when it comes to news, if someone really hates the Rams and you write a hit piece on the Rams, what's the harm in kind of tweeting at them? Hey, I wrote this great piece, or sending it to them. You know, I really like that idea that you brought up of every type of content you're putting out is content marketing, is that you also want to market yourself very much depending on the niche that you're in. And the reason I see people be hesitant in that is a lot of times people just don't have the confidence to go for it. That they're just like, I just tried to do this on the side. Like, it's just a hobby. And it's like, so like at every point, someone had a hobby that turned into something else. And so, Yeah, that's what I try and encourage with kind of some of these different, especially when it comes to news of, okay, who are the reporters that you respect that you'd like to get involved with? Or you've written a lot of content about X and Y and Z, continue to keep doing that and continue to build this archive of, I have talked about this offensive coordinator 1,000 times and finally, and yeah, most of the time you're probably not going to get a huge hit. That offensive coordinator comes out. He had an incredible day. He got traded over here. He's a head coach or something. You're going to have a sweet like 4 days. Yeah. So, yeah.
Yeah. And I like what you said too about publishers with the hesitancy. I find, you know, everybody's on some type of, it's a spectrum of in between, but I talk to a lot of publishers that have almost an overconfidence sometimes, and that actually benefits them in a lot of cases, but it'll hold them back in instances where they don't know something. But the ones that are hesitant, one of the things that I find a lot of times is often they are the ones that are by far some of the biggest experts on whatever their topic is. And it's sort of, you know, you could parlay this to SEO, I'm sure, where it's like the more that you feel like you know, the less you feel like you know. There's that, I forget what they call it, but there's almost like a bell curve to it. And I think that, you know, with publishers that are like, well, I don't know. Yeah, I just do this on the side. You know, who am I to provide, you know, some kind of information or content to this party or this person or this figure? And I think the answer is you'll be surprised. You'll be very surprised by sort of the response to some of your information. Oftentimes, I remember in different instances over time where I couldn't believe that the Harvard Business Review was going to reference this thing that I'd made. And in those instances too, I've also had the opposite experience where I've also tried to provide something I thought was of real value. And then the feedback that I got was, you know, either a list of questions or critiques that I was like, oh, wow, I'd never really thought about all of that. But that's really helpful too, because it's basically figures in your space telling you these are sort of the parameters that need to be fulfilled to reach an audience like mine. And that if that's what you're going after, you're getting somebody to fill in the blanks for you on sort of like what gaps you need to fulfill in both either your content or your expertise. And I think that that's really helpful as well.
Yeah. No, I completely agree that I think if people, whether you have a lack of confidence or an overconfidence of ensuring that you are procuring critiques from friends and enemies, and also ensuring that your content is just simply getting out there, whether it have a positive or negative reaction, is just only going to further you in search.
Absolutely. And we'll touch on one more story for the day. I've enjoyed just talking to you about SEO. But I wanted to touch on our last story because it kind of speaks to, it's a little outside of the world of SEO. So I figured I'd let us talk about something a little bit different, but maybe with the SEO, sort of lean to it, since we've got you here. And that's the ad industry right now with the, sort of like degradation, or I guess like decline of third-party cookies. Oh, I call it both of those things because they're slowly going away. It's out with a whimper, not with a bang. And in many instances, they've been gone for years. But nevertheless, large brands are asking themselves the question of, you know, without these sort of cookies that tell you exactly who an audience is, what data, what information, what metrics can you give to brand advertisers that tell them, you know, you have a valuable audience, or you have a premium audience for them. And this is one area where, unfortunately, for publishers, they're just, we talk about this a lot in the show, but things just go in these cyclical trends. 8 years ago, all the things that we're talking about now in sort of like enterprise publishing, they're all the exact same things that 8 years ago were really, really popular or hot or interesting. And I'm sure that these things will go away and past trends will pop up again. But what brand publishers in this case are talking about is primarily around the things that DSPs and SSPs already have today, which are these deeper profiles of your visitors. But thinking about it from, I guess, like an independent publisher's perspective, and also in terms of, you know, like the data and information that you take in to make, you know, determinations regarding SEO, you know, what information do you think is probably valuable and is realistically something that you could collect and reliably show to advertisers, even as an independent publisher, that maybe would be attractive in terms of, you know, showing them what kind of audience that they're dealing with?
Yeah, no, fantastic question. And I think this is going back to kind of the idea of just the nature of the beast when it comes to Google and how just the landscape continues to change year over year. Even just a year ago, we would be having a different conversation and I'd probably be giving a different answer than I would now. So I think it's important to continue to always be talking about this, especially just in the digital advertising space. And I'm going to give, I'm so excited that I actually get to give this in a professional means to an audience. It depends. The classic SEO answer. It really just depends on, well, what kind of niche are you in? If you're in a, you know, like if you're in the car industry and you write great car news, well, how long, what kind of crawl depth do you have? Are people going to your other articles about the new Honda Accord? Are people going into your specific category pages? How long are people spending on your site? Or are they just going to the page and quickly coming off?
Yeah.
Because to a mechanic, to a part supplier like Rock Auto or something like that, time on page is going to be super big, because the more that you're crawling, the more that you're spending time on the page, the more you're looking at links, the more you're clicking through things, the better odds you are have to click on an internal link over to a Rock Auto advertising page.
Yeah.
Whereas if you go to a complete other niche where it's, let's take education, I guess. Education, if someone is going over to your site and you are providing educational materials for teachers, the advertiser may have a few different options. They could say, well, should I put in banner ads for you? Or should you be writing content about my products? It really just depends on what type of content and what type of metrics can you bring. If you're working with an advertiser that's saying,
great example, by the way, yeah.
Yeah.
I really like that.
Yeah. If an education supplier has educational materials for online learning, probably the best thing that you could provide for them is, I get a lot of people to my site. I get 500,000 people to my site every month, and more often than not, and half of them are a part of my newsletter. Fantastic. Make sure that you have a newsletter within that industry, because it's going to be, that's a plethora of teachers and learners that you can then provide. I think the best thing that I can say about this, and the best kind of recommendation I could give to publishers, is always be open to different types of marketing, types of advertising. The two primary ways that people go with is affiliate and on-page advertisement, which is great. Keep that up. It works. But something that you also should just be open to is treat yourself, as you've kind of said, as like a marketer.
Yeah.
Your site is not just those two things. Your site, think of it like it's going to be a weird example. I have some friends who are really big on TikTok that where they have to think very much like that. I have a good friend who, they've got like 1 million+ followers on TikTok, and they reached out to Walmart to do a Super Bowl ad like a year ago. They had never thought about reaching out to Walmart at all, but they made a great amount of money from just making this random TikTok ad. And if you go back to the education example of, oh, I'm a teacher. I was a teacher for 30 years. Now I'm retired. I'm just trying to make some extra income. You are an authority in that space. You have the ability to market yourself to these advertisers in dozens of ways. That they're looking for someone with authority to talk about their products. They're looking for someone to be an affiliate. They're looking for someone to be a part of their newsletter, et cetera, et cetera. So I think always being diversifying is a great recommendation for that. But also, I think it's really interesting that third parties are kind of continuing to face extinction. And I think that's why it's really important to make sure that your tracking is all enabled on analytics. And thankfully, there's so many different ways that you can do that.
Yeah. And I think, you know, I've said before, I think, you know, third-party cookies made advertisers a little bit lazy, because you could just say, well, I'm counting on this thing that has proven to be not near as good as it was promised years ago by the big tech platforms, for just dumping my money in, and then it'll find my audience for me. And I think publishers, you mentioned the affiliate and sort of programmatic ads, those things are great tools, in the same way that a third-party cookie was kind of a great tool in a lot of ways. in that they allow you to earn income passively from your website, which is great. But the problem with that is then if you also disengage from like who your audience is and what they want, because it degrades the value of that passive income as well. So, you know, you mentioned having sort of a good strategy on, you know, how are we marketing our content to the audience that we have? And a big component of that is, you know, I've mentioned it a couple of weeks ago whenever Google added the follow this publisher sort of feature to the SERPs. And it's that, you know, if you're a YouTuber, if you're on TikTok, or if you're on Instagram, you actually you're actually ahead of web publishers in one respect. And that is, you know, your audience, you're interacting with them. They put comments in, it's you. And then the audience comes directly to you, even though it's on these platforms, you have a very good feel for who they are. Unfortunately for web publishers, because of the nature of Google search, there's this sort of like veil that's pulled between you and your audience to where, you know, it just to you, you're interacting with Google. They're sending you the audience. They're like, yep, keep it up. They're great. They love it, you know? And you're like, I'd like to hear more from them. And unless you're finding ways to sort of like have that interaction and get feedback and knowing what they like and don't like in terms of the way that you market your content to them, you know, you are going to be guessing in the dark here. And so this is one area where it's like, you should be starting to think about like, how would I, if my site was a social media, you know, profile, how would I sort of like interact with my audience, or how can I sort of like make that work? And I think that maybe that juxtaposition is something that I'm personally starting to lean more and more towards, is sort of something that I think is probably important over the next, 5 to 10 years. But it's been great having you on the show, Zach, and picking your brain about any number of things. We could probably talk for another hour, and I'm sure our audience would love that as well. So let's get you back on the show sometime here soon. And anything else that you would leave to our audience about SEO or about the next few months and what to prepare for?
Yeah, it's been an absolute pleasure for being on today. Thank you so much for inviting me. And absolutely, I would love to come back sometime.
I'm sure our audience would love that too. So we'll have our good friend producer Manny here get you back on here in the near term.
Sweet. In terms of recommendations for publishers abroad and close by, is just always be proactive. Always don't become lenient or stagnant. If after this update, the helpful content update that's Google, I believe, is still rolling out today, and you've seen great successes from this, do not stop. Do not keep trying to tweak your site. Do not keep trying to make it better. What's that kind of old saying of an idle hands are the devil's plaything?
Yeah.
The same thing is like the idle hands are John Mueller's plaything. Google will come for your site if you don't keep being proactive. So always be updating, always be curious, and stay really creative. Your creativity is 100% your greatest asset, and keep it up.
Yeah, no, I agree with all of that. And I think that that's great advice. And hopefully everyone on the show has enjoyed sort of the topics today and got something out of today's discussion. And if you have feedback, questions for me, questions for Zach, we get some questions that maybe are SEO oriented, we can get Zach back on quickly and answer those questions. Those things are some of the best, the best content for us to continue to produce. I mean, We're big proponents of eating our own dog food here. And anytime you go to publisherlab.org and leave us questions or comments or feedback, we integrate that stuff pretty much the next week, because it's great. We love listening to you, and we hope you continue to love listening to the show on podcast platforms everywhere. And if you want to watch on YouTube. And I think that's it. Zach, thanks again. And thanks to everybody listening. We'll catch you next time on the Publisher Lab.